Let's read the pasuk again one more time. The pasuk is pasuk Zayin on page 228. Ki dibarim yerutzun ki anshei milchama. The locust. We did the entire page in one shot. So let's back read the whole page very quickly one more time. Pasuk Vav. We'll go back one more pasuk just to get reacquainted with what we discussed yesterday. Miponav yachilu amim. We're discussing the locust. Good morning, shalom aleichem. Shalom aleichem. Welcome. Can be pandav yachilu amim. Can the pasuk here is discussing the locust. On page 228, we're discussing the locust. We are discussing the locust, and the locusts are about to ascend upon Eretz Yisrael. And we are describing the locust in very magnificent terms. We describe the locust as if it's an army. An army, you would think we're describing milchemes goyig u'magog. And miponav, from the presence of the locust, yachilu amin, all of the nations of the world will be overcome with fear. Kol panim kibitzu farur. We learned yesterday in new perushim, all faces will be turned black. Kibitzu means it will collect towards their face the dust or blackness. Their face will become black like the bottom of a pot. The word parur is a pot, as we learned yesterday from the mun. Vishalu baparur. And here it refers to the blackness of the underside of the pot. People will be overcome with fear and terror, and their complexion will darken. Pasuk Zayin, ki giborim yerutzun, the army, referring to the locusts, will march, will run like mighty soldiers, ki anshei milchama, like warriors, like men of war, yalu chayma, they will ascend the wall. Okay, they're going to ascend. What wall are the locusts ascending? It's not really clear here, but we're giving over here some type of description. The ish bedrachav yelechun, each soldier will travel in his way. Lo ya'abitun or choysam. We learned yesterday the word ya'abitun is a unique word, does not appear anywhere else in Tanakh. And this context, it means, in the context, we have to say, it means they will not become, get caught up or be detoured.
They'll hold their position,
not get stuck. The road will not become crooked in their direction, in their path, in their destination. One man against the other will not push. There will be no pushing. Everyone will be in formation. Everyone will do what there's. Each soldier will proceed on his path, and one soldier will not push the other soldier. Now, I would think this means more poetically, there will be no casualties of friendly fire, right? Lo yitchakun, one will not push the other. If you're marching, and one soldier, by mistake, he pushes someone, that's because he thinks that person is an imposter, is an enemy combatant. And he's not. He's one of the team. Okay, right. Different interpretation. What simply means is that the army will proceed with precision. Everything will, the plan will be carried out perfectly. Gever, each man, bimsilo soy, in his path, yelechun, will travel forward. Uveat hashelach yipoilu, lo yiftso. We have two translations of these words. Shelach means weapons. Simply means, we try to say in the Mitzvah, it means that each man will stay positioned at his weapon. Each person, Yipolu, it's a hard word to translate Yipolu in the Mitzvah, Yishkinu. He learns what Yipolu means. They will dwell. They will position themselves up against their weapon. They will stand strong with their weapon together as one unit, as one army, one battalion. Lo yivtsohu, they will not splinter into smaller groups. They will maintain their unit. The power is in numbers, is in the koyach of the tzibur. And the army will maintain the strength of being one unit. And they will stand. Yipolu, we're substituting the word Yipolu according to the Mitzudos to mean they will station themselves alongside their weapons. The shelach is their weapon. Lo yitzahu, they will not splinter into smaller groups. That would be a sign, an indication of weakness. They're afraid and they're hiding out in smaller groups.
In English, you're saying we'll not break ranks.
Break ranks. Okay, good, very good. Break ranks. So today we live in a world where the wars that we fight today are guerrilla warfare. What is guerrilla warfare? Small yechidim, individuals, a fellow hiding here, fellow hiding there. It's almost like you're cowards. If the ancients would look at us and see how we fight wars today in guerrilla warfare, people are hiding out in fatigue clothing, they would say, that's not the way you fight. This whole idea of even wearing the uniform of a soldier is to blend in with the environment. In the Middle East, it's the color of sand. In America, it used to be more the color of, you know, Vietnam, it would be the dark green to blend into the trees, into the tropical typical environments. That's not the way they fought, even the Civil War. Camouflage garments. That's not the way this whole thing didn't exist in ancient times. They formed this beautiful...
Yes, cool. That's what they did.
Okay.
It's
asymmetric. It was hit and run. It's how you fight against it when you're vastly outnumbered.
Okay, but typically the wars that we dramatize and are made into motion pictures are the wars where, from the ancient times, where they're wearing these beautiful uniforms, colorful uniforms, a civil war, you know, and the
red coats.
Yeah, you could identify a soldier a mile away in the way they dress. Everything about them identifies... Exactly. So over here, the impression you get over here from this pasuk is this war that we are describing is going to be such a type of war. Each man will stand ba'ad ha-shalach yipalu. They'll be stationing themselves proudly with their weapons, standing in the field, in the battlefield. Lo yivtzoh, they're not going to splinter into small little groups. They're going to stand as a unit, as a group. There's a different type of war than we are accustomed to, at least in modern times, where we don't hear about this type of wars where you march. You go and battle one army against the other in the open field. They clash with one another. This other interpretation we learned yesterday is they're not subject to taking bribes. The ad hashalach yipolu. The word yipolu does not refer to the soldier. Yipolu means to the victim, that the victim will fall under the weapon, will be pierced by the weapon. The weapon will stab, will kill, will damage the victim. And lo yivtzahu, and the enemy is not subject to receiving bribes. Yivtzahu comes from the word betza. Ma betza ki naharege sochinu. They're not the victim, the aggressor, the enemy, the soldier is not willing to take a bribe in order to hold back and not kill the victim that he's attempting to kill with his weapon. Okay, so this, we did this yesterday, we spent a lot of time yesterday on the Mitzvus and Rashi, and we did here for the Radak, we're up to Pasuk Zayin in the Radak, on page 229, Kigivodim Yirutzun Lo Ye'avtun Orchoyson. So we're now going to focus on the word Ye'abitun. We learned that this is an unusual word, does not have any similarity. Anywhere in Tanakh, this word appears once in the entire Tanakh, at least going to Rashi and the Mitzudos. However, let's see what he says. The Radak Targumoi lo me'akvin or choshoin. They will not be withheld. The word yabtun. They're not going to get caught. They're not going to get stuck. They're not going to get stuck on the road. They're not going to get a flat tire. Okay, the tanks. The what's it called? The metal that goes around the tank. The tread is not going to break. They're not going to get stuck. They're not going to be any impediments on the road that are going to hold them back. The ein lechaver b'mikra, there is no precedent for this unusual word. The yesh mefarsh moso. However, some do say this word does have a precedent. Min havet ta'avitenu. It means severance. Okay, havet ta'avitenu. K'mosh amar gever b'msilasai. It's havet ta'avitenu. Not severance. Sorry.
It's something that he has to take
a mashkoin. Okay, so you're taking a collateral.
Yeah,
there's no collateral to take. Kamosh amar gever bimsiloso yelechun. So in this context, it means lo yavtun or choysam. There's nothing going to be taken. Nothing going to be to hold them back. It's the same idea. It's the same idea, but it's borrowed from the word a collateral. A collateral is something that you take from your fellow man when you extend a loan. Collateral. What is the purpose? The purpose is to hold back the borrower from escaping.
Guarantee.
It's a guarantee, but it's a guarantee. So therefore, he's bound. The borrower, if you do not take collateral from the borrower will just skip town. And he has a temptation not to pay back his debt. But now that I've taken from him a mashkoin, I've taken collateral, haveta avitenu, you've taken the collateral, the borrower is not going to run away. The borrower is going to remain in this position, in this location, and work to pay off the debt so he can get back his valuable object that was given as a mashkoin. So the essence, the Radak is teaching us, the essence of a mashkoin is something which holds you back from escaping, from running away and freeing yourself from your obligations. So we take that concept, it really needs to be held back. Here in the Pasuk, we now, it makes sense. Lo yabitun orchosam, their desire, their path, their mission, their direction will not be held back. They will be able to proceed at free will to their destination, to carry out their mission. Nothing will hold them back. And the word is not a loner. It's not all alone. There is a precedent. It comes from the word collateral, and that's exactly what collateral is. It is something which holds the borrower from running away and freeing himself from his obligation. This is similar to what is the next part. Each man will travel, proceed on his path. A mesila is a path. Nothing will hold him back. The yesh mefarshim also kmo ye'avesun, it means like a sin. Yeah, crookedness. Ivui means crookedness. So here it's the same thing that their road will not become crooked. Now how do you get from the word ya'abitun to the word ya'abisun? Very simple. We interchange the tes with the suf or the tuf. Because they do have, as far as we're concerned, Ashkenazim, we don't even differentiate between the two. There's no difference. The average person does not make it have. There's no different sound between a tes and a tuf for the average man today. Is that correct? And that is why it's one of the most common spelling mistakes when you write various words which have this sound. The most common spelling mistake is to use the wrong letter. When you're supposed to use a tes, you use a tuf. When you're supposed to use a tuf, you use a tes. And in fact, there are even certain names. There are certain names, and when it's spelled in Hebrew, you could have two different families that have exactly the same name in English, the same pronunciation, and one will spell it with a tav, and one will spell it with a tes, because we pronounce it the same. So in halacha, in the world of Agada, you can interchange the two words, our two letters have a similar sound, even though they're not exactly the same. According to the true letter of the law, the truth, they have a different sound. It's just that we are not experts in pronouncing the sound correctly.
It's a verbal language, that's why, as opposed to a written language. The verbal language, the sound is the same. You can't tell.
The truth is, there is a difference in the sound. It's just that we are not skilled in differentiating. Maybe the Teimonim, I'm sure they are skilled in differentiating between the sound of a tes and the sound of a tav, but being that they are very similar, we are permitted in the laws of Agada, the laws of Halacha, to that some degree, to interchange one letter with another, and that's exactly what we're doing over here. Ya'abitun, if we would change the tes to a tav, it would be similar.
The tes is actually a T. The way
transliteration?
TH.
A tough is a TH.
That's how they
differentiate. That's the real pronunciation. But they're similar enough where we can change letters, and thus, what would the result be? The result would be that it would be Ya'avisun. Now, how does that explain the Beis? It's also not such a kasha, because the letter Beis, the letter Vav, are also interchangeable. Okay, what is the most popular example of them being interchangeable? But every wedding. Every wedding, the age-old question, the bracha is Mekadesh Yisrael al Yidei Chupa V'Kiddushin. What comes first at a wedding? First comes the Kiddushin. That's anyone who learns Masechta Kiddushin, there's almost no such thing in the entire Masechta of having a chupa nisuin before kiddushin. First is the kiddushin. Harayat mikudeshasli. You create the erisin. That's the erisin where they're legally married, but they're not allowed to live together. The second part of the marriage is another kinyan where the husband takes the wife into his rishus, called the nisuin. In the entire Masech, the kiddushin, the order is only one way. First comes kiddushin, then comes nisuin. Chuppah is nisuin. The method of doing nisuin is by taking the woman into your rishus. The chuppah is the rishus, is the domain of the husband. And when the kala comes into under the chuppah, the kala is coming into the home of the chassan. So the problem is that in the nusach of the bracha, from all things we say, Mekadesh Yisrael, Hashem sanctifies Yisrael, al yedei chuppah v'kiddushin. Chuppah, which is second, with a vav, v'kiddushin, and then kiddushin. The order is wrong. If we were writing the bracha, we would say, Mekadesh Yisrael, al yedei kiddushin v'chuppah. So why is it in this order? So the answer is, one of the simplest answers is because indeed we do it backwards. Forget about what it says in the Gemara. Do it backwards.
The Rif says on Daf Ches in Ksubis, that's what he explains. It's a spelling mistake.
Oh, we'll get that one second. Yeah. But what's the simple answer? The simple answer is that we indeed do it backwards. The Kala first comes into the Chuppah, although we do not yet make the bracha on the chuppah until later. First, she comes into the chuppah, and in the chuppah, we then make the bracha. Is for the we do the kiddushin, and then we make the bracha is on the chuppah, which really happened before the chassan gave her the tabas of kiddushin. Why in halacha are we not following the correct seder? That's a separate kasha. But the bottom line is the mitzvah says that indeed bizman hazeh, the technique is to do it backwards. First the chuppah, then the kiddushin. The bracha reflects the order in which we do it in our day and age. Another very popular answer is that the badekin is also a form of chuppah, and that's certainly done before we do the kiddushin. Now that's the simple answer. It's a much better answer, and that answer is given to us by the Sfaradim, not all Sfaradim. I looked in some Svarish Asurim Salim, and it's not like that, but there are. I don't know. I do not know which group this is true, and they have a different girsa, and their girsa is al yidei chuppah with a base be kiddushin.
That's the riff.
Not like the riff, not the vav al yidei chuppah ve kiddushin, but be kiddushin. When you have the base instead of the vav, what does that mean? What does that do? It means al yidei chuppah that is only active after you have accomplished the technique of kiddushin. When you add the base in between these two words, it changes the flavor of the words to mean first is kiddushin, and through the kiddushin we trigger the ability to now do the chuppah. The chuppah that only came about into this existence in this world because b'kiddushin, because it was built upon a foundation of kiddushin. Now, isn't that interesting? We have two nuschos. One nusach is with a vav, and one nusach is with a beis.
But he says what? He says that after also the heavy gumach doesn't make a dogesh, so it was, but when they write it out, they have. You know, people would read it and then write it. That's where mistakes came.
Oh, so it's a mistake.
The person reading it said, Ali de chuppah b'kiddushin, because that was the correct pronunciation.
B'kiddushin.
Because after osios a heavy, chuppah ends in a A, and gumach doesn't take the dog A. So correctly, it's not b'kiddushin, it's
v'kiddushin.
So the person who wrote it heard v'kiddushin, he wrote the vav.
The vav.
That's what he says.
Speaking as opposed to written.
Right, so it just goes to show how far the beis and the vav are similar. We don't need this whole drasha I told you. We can hear it on our own that the letter beis and the letter vav are similar. But look how far this difference has penetrated in the world of halacha. There's no more glorious ceremony today. There's no ceremony today that people spend more money on than the chuppah and the kiddushin. And look what happened. The vav and the beis have gotten confused. The Bav, the Vav, and the Bay. So therefore, it's not so far-fetched to understand that in this pasuk here we have over here, Ya'abitun, everyone here is struggling, Rashi and the Mitzudos, and the Radak in his first interpretation says, here is a word, there is absolutely no precedent for this word anywhere in the entire Tanakh. For Rashi to make such a statement is a powerful statement. Doesn't exist. One time, the word appears only one time in the entire Hebrew language. And therefore, we don't know what it means. The way we know what words mean is only by collecting all those similar words and context and analyzing them, then we get an appreciation of what the word means. There is no such precedent to having these letters together. Ayin, Beis, and Tes does not exist. Therefore, what is the only solution? We have only one where we have to study the context and come up with a translation which is not necessarily accurate because it's the only place we have it in the entire Tanakh. But the Radak says not so fast. All you have to know is the secret of substitution. Substitute the Vav for the Beis for a Vav. Substitute the Tes for a Tav. And then it's going to be Ya'avsun. Ooh, the word Ya'avsun. That's a very popular word. That means crookedness. That means to be crooked. V'yesh mefarshim also ke'ein is the Ibn Ezra really say. He quotes the Ibn Ezra right on top on the right side. Ye'avesun. Ayin vav sof. Everyone knows that word. V'hu b'loshoin arvi. Okay, this is the word we do have. It's not so uncommon. And that is an Arab. That's not a Hebrew word. Okay, it's not. You have to grant that. It's not a Hebrew word. And it's loshon yishmo ivri. And but it means crookedness. And then, I mean, but the bottom line is, they're all very similar. The ideas are the similar. The context is really the same context, but the precise word, it's very interesting. We have over here, we have a maskana three perushim. Either it's unprecedented, or it comes from the word, and ha'avet ta'avitenu. Ayin beis tes, it's the same shoresh, it is, which means a pledge, which we call a mashkoin. And the goal of the mashkoin is to withhold, is to prevent the borrower from leaving, from going away, disappearing. It anchors him down to me, to the lender, to make sure I'll have a leash on you. You're not going anywhere. You are held back because you want back your prized possession.
Like bail in prison.
Exactly. You're not going nowhere. We took away your passport. You're not going nowhere. You're stuck over here. You're anchored down. You're connected to us. And from the context, exactly what it means. Nothing is holding back these mighty warriors from proceeding to accomplish their mission. Or the last interpretation is, it's changed, substitute two letters, and the road is not crooked. It's a straight path. There's no room to make a mistake. The soldiers will proceed with precision to their goal. Pasachas, the ish gever, bim silasa, lefishim shilam b'kwa nashim, yibarim amma gever. Okay, the Radak is apologizing. Why in the world are we referring to these little creatures of locust with the word gever? And all these exotic words for locusts, we give the locust such superhuman characteristics. So it's not a kash. He says that's just the style of the writing here in the pasuk. Even though really the truth is this expression has no application to human beings. Now what is the shelach? So Mitsudo said it's a weapon, as klei zayin. He's more specific. Hashalach hu hasayif, it's the sword. V'chein ma'avar ba'sholach, those who pass through the sword. V'ein mishlachas ba'milchama, there's no one. Now that word, that's different. Simple translation in Kohelis means no one gets an exemption. See, as you learn over here, you see, incidentally, you learn over here new perushim and psukim that you think you know what it means. This pasuk, I always thought it meant, I'm sure that's what the Mefarshim say, is V'ein, we learn Kohelis together, V'ein mishlachas ba'milchama, there are no exemptions. When there is a war, there is a draft, and everyone has to participate in the milchama, no one is shalach, no one is sent away, go home, mihu ish, hayorei, v'rach levav, yelech v'yoshuv levesev, lo yimas es echov. That's only true, a milchemes reshus. At the time of Milchemes Mitzvah, every single person has to participate in the war, even if he is afraid of the Averois sheyesh biyadai, even if he just got married, he just built a house, he just planted a vineyard, there are no exemptions for melchemes mitzvah. This that we are familiar, that there are exemptions, it's only when it comes to a melchemes rishus. And here this pasuk is describing melchemes mitzvah, ve'ein mishlachas ba'melchama, no one gets to be sent home. But along comes the Radak, and he tells us that's not what it means. It means ve'ein mishlachas ba'melchama. I don't know what it means. He's saying that the word mishlachas means weapons. It means a saif.
You can see that.
I think what it means over here is no one's going to be spared from the spear. Pun intended.
You could say a weapon is something that is sent forth, whether it's
okay, of course,
in or
a missile. Or you thrust.
Or even a sword.
You thrust a sword forward. But what does it mean in the pasuk? Ein mishlachas ba'melchama. What does that mean then in the pasuk? If you're going to tell me the word mishlachas means a sword, a spear, so what then does it mean that no one's going to be free from carrying a sword? No one's going to be free from being the victim? Everyone's going to be a casualty? I don't know. But he's telling us over here that the word shelach does in that pasuk as well does not only mean simply an exemption. It has something to do with the term, the word, the concept of a weapon. Uva ad perish kumo al. The word ad means al, concerning. Kumo vayiska Hashem ba'adoi. The chi ba'adoi means concerning this person. Yipol kumo yachanu. Yipolu, he's learning like the mitzvah means to encamp. It's we substitute the word yipolu, yachanu. They will be positioned. They will be positioned next to their weapon, next to their tank, next to their missiles, their army, their guns. V'chein al pnei kol echov nofol. We find that in by Yishmoel. Nofol means they'll encamp right next to the Jews. Noiflim bo emek to mean positioned in the valley. Lo yivtzahu kamo lo yivtzahu min petza tachas potza, to be wounded. So he is learning a new interpretation. It does not mean bribery. It does not mean that they're not subject to being bribed. It does not mean they're going to be splintered. They're going to fall out of rank. Is that what he said, fall out of rank? It means they're not going to be injured. There will be no casualties. There will be no soldiers who are wounded in this battle. The army is so strong and is so well organized. They've taken into consideration every possibility, and they've taken the precautions. There will be no soldier in this army that will suffer any injury or casualty. This is v'ad hashalach yipalu. They will remain positioned alongside their weapon. Lo yiftzahu. No one will get hurt in this battle from the army. And the word yiftzahu, he's telling us to substitute the pay for the bays. And that's very common, we have it many times. The pay and the bays are two letters which can be interchanged. And then it's petza. Petza means a wound. Okay, so a new interpretation. Petza tachas patza, v'poyal oimed. This is a verb. Is this a verb? This is not a verb. It's an adverb, maybe. V'cheinu uvitzom. V'lo yivtzom. No one will be hurt. A poil, it's not. It means it's being injured is a verb, right? To become.
Yeah.
So here it means
injury is a noun, but it's
that's a poilomate. So it's a play on a verb. It's some type of variation of a real verb. Then he quotes some sugma over here. Shetimonim b'lovo alecha. I'm not sure what that means. Okay, but simply means a petza. Let's leave it with that. The Yoidasam tier game, Shelach and Shlichus. Okay, he's learning a new pshat, the word shalach. V'yivtzo inyan soynei betza. It means bribery. Amar ula asar di'inun shalichoin ozlin katan v'lo mekabel mamoin. So he learns very nicely, v'ad hashalach, wherever the enemy is sent, is dispatched, he will go. Yipoilu, he will encamp. He will settle. He will do his mission. Lo yiftsahu. He is not subject to bribery. When he arrives at his destination where he was sent to go, the victims will not be able to, the intended victims will not be able to bribe this enemy, this soldier, to go away. That's how pretty similar how you learned before, but here he's telling us what shalach means, where he's dispatched. Inyin salibotza, Omar ulasar, the place where they are sent, Oslin, Khatun, they will go and they will kill. The law mikablin mamon, they will not receive money in exchange. Omar Inam Kashaivim Shemafaisim Bamamon, they're not like other enemies which Shemafaisim Bamamon, which can be appeased, bribed with money. Okay. Now let's take a look here at the Malbum. The Malbum starting back Pasuk Vav. On the bottom of page 2, on the bottom of page 229. Okay. Mipanav Ulam ha'amim yachil biponav lo ye'ervu libam lilchem negdoi. The enemy is not going to try to fight. They'll be defeated before the war starts. V'chol panim yiskabetz pe'eroi v'hadoroi me'eroi v'pachad v'hayogoin. The Malbim is learning like the second parish in the parish of the Radak, which the father of the Radak thoroughly rejected. What was the parish of the Radak, second parish? The word parur does not mean the blackness of a pot, but the word parur comes from the word pe'er, pride, glory. And the pasuk then means kibitzu farur, the pride of man will disappear, will be removed because of the terror that has come upon him. The reason why the Radak's father did not like this interpretation is because then the word kibitzu does not fit. It should be ispu, that their pride will be gathered in. The word kibitzu, there is no precedent anywhere in Tanakh where the word kibitzu is used to mean isfu, to use what the pasuk will then be trying to tell us, is that the pride will be removed. It should say isfu and not kibitzu, and we went through many examples in Tanakh, and every single example there, the word is isfu, not the word kibitzu, and that's why the Radak's father says this cannot be the pshat. We have to go back to the pshat of Rashi and the Mitzudois, and the Radak's other interpretation, the word parur, it means a pot. And in this context, it means the blackness of the pot. What was the difficulty with this interpretation? Why then is there an aleph? In the pasuk by the mon, it says parur, and there is no aleph. So you have to say the aleph here is liyeser se'es. It's been thrown in just to enhance, as a vowel, to enhance the expression, but it's not part of the actual sheresh. If the word was pe'er, then indeed the aleph belongs. It's part of the sheresh, the po'al, the ayin of po'al. Pasuk Zayin, ki gibayrim, ata na mitzayer, back in the mountain page 229, ata mitzayer, ech yichmeshu es ha'chaymas ro'ir, shetchila yirutzun es ha'chaymo ki gibayrim. We're describing how the locusts are going to overcome the wall. First they will run, like mighty soldiers. Ki ha'om ya'aruchu milchama min ha'chaymo u'bepesach ha'shar, v'tzaruch lorutz b'gvura lehagia al ha'an ha'chaymo u'lehavriach ha'loichamim. You first have to reach the wall of the city. Outside the city, there are soldiers protecting the city. You have to overcome them. The acharkach tzarich lodas tachsisi mulchama. You have to know the ways, the methods of war. Eich la'alois elachoyme. How to overcome the wall? How to rise above the wall? How do we do that? We build a rampart. Okay, that's always mentioned in many places. You build a ramp. They would dig. They would take. We collect earth from all over and spend lots of time building a massive ramp in order to go up to the top of the wall. It was very dangerous to build the ramp, because as they were building the ramp, the people from inside the city were shooting down missiles upon the people who were trying to build this ramp. So it took a lot of korbanos, a lot of soldiers died as korbanos while they were building this ramp. And when the ramp was built, then they just go up the ramp, and then they jump over if they come down on the other side. Then each soldier is given a position. Very quickly, they have a strategy. They organize themselves into a strategy. What do the Zenikra Oirach? They'll say, "Amar Ish Bedrach of Yelechon Shu Haderek Kadlov Gam Lo Yabatun Or Chosam Shu Oirach Had Study." Okay, he's not explaining what the word means over here. He, in fact, on the side in the Ber Hamilus, he says it means they're not going to be withheld. He quotes the perish that means Havei Tabitun Pasik Ches the Ish Achiv Lo Yidchakun Ki Oit Sarich Lizar Shelo Yelchu Beir Buvia. When soldiers proceed to their destination, they have to be very careful that they do not, there's no friendly fire, and they proceed in perfect formation. If they get out of formation, that can be a threat that could damage their strategy. Ad sheyitchak ish esachiv v'yipol, friendly fire, like I told you. So Mamish says over here, the Malbim says that over here, this part of the said in the beginning, it means there should be no friendly fire. They'll push each other and they'll kill each other. Incredible chiddush, the Malbim Lo Yimshan in the pasuk. What does it mean here? He's the one who really, see, he's really here. The Malm has come back alive. I told you the Malm was very quiet the last couple of days. Well, here he has reinstated himself. He heard my insults and he came back to show that he's at the top of his game. And he says the pshat over here, such a novel pshat, the end of the pasuk refers, the whole pasuk is describing the strategy. First, you have to march towards the city. And there are soldiers all over the place, booby traps, all over the place, waiting to prevent the army from reaching the city. So the army has to overcome. Then they come to the wall of the city. They have to build a ramp. They build a ramp. Now they ascend the ramp to the top of the wall. Now, what happens next? Now they have to jump. They have to jump from the top of the wall. Maybe they use ropes, whatever they use, they have to descend from the top of the wall to come into the city, to come down into the city and open the gates so the army can go into the gates, into the city itself. When the soldiers jump from the top of the wall into the city, below them are the people who are living in the city that are trying to kill them, that are trying to prevent them from opening the gates, from coming down. They're shooting at them. They're shelach. There are weapons everywhere that are directed towards the army that is jumping into the city. So the army needs precision, strategy, and chokhmah, how to jump from the wall into the city in such a way they will land safely and not be killed in the process by the weapons that are directed towards them. So the uva'ad hashelach yipolu, the word yipolu, he answers the question. All the mefarshim are struggling. What does it mean, yipolu? What does this word mean, yipolu? So Rashi says, it means yishkinu. The Radak says it means yachanu. The soldiers are encamped. They are in position. No! The word yipolu literally means to fall. It means to jump from a high location to the ground. The soldier in this pasuk is located at the moment when this pasuk begins on the top of the wall, and he's jumping down from the top of the wall into the city. And in the city he is surrounded by his enemy. His enemy are the people of the city who are holding in their hands weapons, shalach, and the weapons are aimed to kill him and to cut him up into little pieces. He has to fall in a strategic way that come within the shalach amongst all the weapons and lo yiftsohu, and not be injured and not be cut up into little pieces or suffer a petza from his descent into the city. Strategy. Okay, that's the Malbim for you.
This is the greatest movie.
What? It sure is. And these are locusts. Okay, these are not even human beings. These are four different types of locusts. Something over here is obviously, we're dealing over here with a whole new league. According to the Abarbanel, it's very satisfying. Because the Abarbanel is describing this, these psukim we learn until Pasuk Tezvav is describing the Churban Bayis Rishon. And indeed, this is what it says. This is exactly what happened. All these images of the ramparts and the soul, Nebuchadnezzar, soldiers jumping in. I mean, this is all, this is the way it happened. Okay, it's the way it happened. So it fits very well.
The locusts are the enemy warriors.
They're warriors. And the locust has a connotation, numerous, beyond Mispar. Swarming. You can't even, there's so many of them, you can't even count. Like you see the from World War II, you see the airplanes, when the bombers, they look at this, you look at these movies, and you see in the sky, there's like insects. Like insects just coming, swarming over the land. They're so numerous, it's beyond, it's frightening. The degree of the power is in the numbers. Okay, so this concludes the Malbim. The Malbim is incredible. He talks about friendly fire. He talks about the idea of strategy. He really puts these psukim in modern terms. Okay, West Point, they have to use these psukim to give you an appreciation of how to engage in war. Now, but let's see, before we go on. Okay, before we go on, we don't have any Mamori Chazal. Okay, so let's go now to the next pasuk. Okay, so moving along very quickly. Okay, let's move on to pasuk tes. Be'er, be'er yoshoiku, b'choyma yirutsu. Now, what is happening? We're really continuing what is what's happening now when the soul will pick up with the, will make believe we understand that we'll use the approach of the Malbim. The enemy has entered the city. In the city, yoshoiku. The word yoshoiku means sound. It means there's a lots of noise. There's a lots of commotion. If we look in the Mitzudos Sion on page 231, Yoshoiku means Inyan Hashmoas Koil Kimoi Kimashak Gevim. That expression means also. I'm not sure what that means. There it means sound. There's
that
lots
like the roaring of the cisterns.
Of the cisterns, okay.
Yeah, like water rushing.
Rushing water. Water makes lots of noise. Water is always associated with noise. What's the opposite of water that makes no noise? It's a new insight I came across very recently. Fascinating drasha. Oil. Bar yochai, moshach, bar yochai, we describe bar yochai as a person that's anointed with oil. Aaron was anointed with oil. He was the Koyein Gadol. Why oil? From the Mitzias and Chazal's eyes. Every liquid makes noise. Every liquid, when liquid is on the move, there is noise. The liquid that makes the most noise is
water.
Ever go to Niagara Falls? I never went there. I haven't gone yet. But supposedly it's deafening. Supposedly the sound is deafening.
Well, the water landing.
The water landing.
Just put on your sink.
Water, when water, people, right, that's how they disguise. You turn on the water, people, you have most people who would cry. Parents would cry. They didn't want their children to hear them cry. They went into the bathroom and they turned on the sink. You turn on the sink, so the sound of the water flowing, it masks sound, right? It masks sound. I think that's one of the things they teach you in spy school. So you're a spy. Anyone here work for the Mossad? Anyone here work for the Mossad, the CIA, you're in spy school, so you have to tell us on a secret message, you turn on the water. You turn on the water, and when you turn on the water, that causes interference, and the listening devices cannot pick up what you're saying. Water makes noise. From all the liquids in the eyes that are known to Chazal, which liquid makes no noise at all? The other opposite extreme, shemen, oil. Water is the noisiest liquid. Shemen is a silent liquid. When you pour oil from one location to the next, there is no noise whatsoever. Aaron, what was Aaron's hallmark? Vayidoim Aaron. Aaron was silent. When Aaron heard the tragic report that his children died, Vayidoim Aaron, he was silent. Thus, Aaron is roy for the Shemen HaMishcha. Because the Shemen is special holy oil. An oil, by definition, is an oil which does not make sound. Rashbi is described over and over as a person who is anointed with oil. Rashbi suffered 13 years in the cave and was quiet. Rashbi criticized the government. He said, whatever the government does, the Romans do, it's for their own benefit. They build bridges to collect taxes. They build bathhouses in order to put in the bathhouses zaynos, v'chulu. When the government found out what he said, they wanted to kill him. He ran away. He ran away in isolation, silence, sat and learned in the cave for 13 years. He was quiet. He disappeared from this world. He went into isolation and he had no complaints. No complaints. He was makabel, the gzera, ba'ahava. He suffered, didn't have what to eat. His body was full of all these horrible things, Chazal say. He was makabel, the yisurim ba'ahava. He didn't make a sound. No complaints. Someone who doesn't make a complaint, doesn't speak, doesn't complain when it's natural to complain, is deserving, l'shem shamayim, in a spiritual way, is deserving shemen hamishka. Because shemen is the oil, is the liquid that does not make any noise. It's a fascinating insight to explain the difference between water and shemen. We say every time, kol Hashem al hamayim. We talk about mayim all the time. Kol, the sound of Hashem is al hamayim. What does that mean? Mayim is the loudest object in this world. So therefore, it's associated with the kol Hashem. On the other hand, there's a time in this world of silence. Chanukah is all about shemen. There's a lot of Torah which flows from this concept of oil and water. So here we're saying, Bo'ir in the city of Yoshoiku, there's lots of noise. Bachoyma, you're quoting a pasuk from the cisterns of the wells. The wells is always called, the water is always associated with the concept of sound. Bachoyma Yerutsun, they run, now this means on the wall simply, we have this in the Farshim. They run Bachoyma on the wall, maybe once they run through the wall, now they open up the doors. Babotim Yalu, they ascend, they enter into all of the homes. Ba'ad HaChalaynim Yavo Kagadav, they come into the windows like a ganaf. Now before you go further, I just want to point out this, I always tell you this, and I love this part, and here's the Makar. Going through a window is called a ganaf. You see, we today, unfortunately, have lost all sensitivity to any matters of Kedusha, to a very large degree, unfortunately. But there's a very famous story in Volozhin, in Rav Chaim of Volozhin, where they used to come to learn every morning very early. And one day they came, and I don't know the details of the story, but Rav Chaim of Volozhin, he knew that the doors to the Beis Medrash were locked. And he came, and the boys were in the Beis Medrash sitting and learning. So he asked them, how did you get in? I'm the only one that has the key. If I didn't open up the door, how did you get in? So the boys said, that's right, we were here, the door was locked. So one of the boys, Bittel Torah. Torah, how could he Bittel Torah? So we pried open the window, and one of the boys jumped in the window and came around, opened the door. So Rav Chaim Volozhin said, we're going to be goyzer tomorrow, a tainis tzibur, and we're going to lein vayachal. How could you go through the window? Going through the window is the derech of a ganef. How could a ben Torah, someone who learns Torah, how could he not have the sensitivity to do something like this? Okay, it's cold outside, the door is locked, you have a solution. The solution is to go through the window. Does it not say in Sefer Yoel that the ad hachaloinim yovohu kaganov? The pasuk did not need to say like a ganov. These are rishoyim. These are wicked people here that are coming to kill and pillage and rape and who knows what. All of a sudden, we have to describe them like a ganov. Ganov is the least of their problems. It's the most polite word you can use in reference to these thugs, hoodlums, and these wicked people. And here it says, Ba'ar ha'chaloinim yovo kaganov. There's a lesson being taught here, incidentally, is that to go through the window is a derech of a ganov. Yeah. And a ben Torah, this is not what a ben Torah does. You don't go through the window. There's something fundamentally lacking in your midos, in your sensitivity to Kedusha, if you can come into the Beis Medrash by prying open the window to come around. Now today, this is laughable. It's laughable. Okay, I'll be the first one to jump in the window. Okay? It's laughable today. But it just goes to show how far we've fallen the sensitivity of a Davar Shebe Kedusha. They were goyzer a tainis, and they lain vayichal, like Tisha B'Av, because one boy went into they were all standing outside freezing cold, and they couldn't get in, so one boy opened up the window and jumped in and opened up the door for everyone else. You give him an award today for this, for his heroic actions. But no, this is what the pasuk says. When you go through a window, you are behaving like a ganav. And that has an effect on your neshama. And it's not proper. That's what it says here. Let's see. Let's see the next pasuk. Pasuk Yud Lifanov Rogzo Eretz. Before this enemy, the earth, rugs are quaked. Okay, rugs even get angry. What does it mean getting angry? It means, I don't know, it means obviously some shaking with some very loud sound. We have to see more precision in a few moments. Ra'ashu means to shout. Noise, shamoyim. Shemesh, v'yarech, kodaru, turn black. The sun, sunspots. The yareach, also, the Yireach, we always hear in the news, say every other day they have in the news pictures of the moon. It looks funny. In this part of the world, that part of the world, they show these bizarre images of what the moon looks like and due to certain circumstances. I'm not familiar with this. V'chechavim asfu nakam. So here's one of the psukim that the Radak's father, in the previous page, says that the word kavitsu, kibitsu, is the wrong word. If you want to refer to the withdrawing of light, to indicate darkness, the correct word is osifu, not kibitzu, like it says here in this pasuk. The stars, they withdrew their shine. Let's look at Mefarshim, these two psukim, pasuk tes and the mitzudos David. Bo'ir yoshoiku, besoi cho'ir yashmiu kol. They made loud sounds. V'yarutzu ala choymos v'yalu b'abotim v'yavo bohem derech ha'chalaynos k'mo ha'ganef lufit shim shilu la'am omar loshon ha'noifel v'an shemulchama abirei levav. The mighty, audacious individuals, their hearts are powerful. Ha'leichamim b'choska v'inyin melitza. Everything here is just a metaphor, an expression to bring out the intensity of the makkah, of the arbe, the locust, the four types of locusts that are going to come upon the earth. Lifanov rugs ha'aretz, return aloymar, tsar gadol yihye ba'olam be'es yavoy, ki ilu tirgas aretz, the earth is going to shake. Virashu hashamayim, and the heavens are going to roar. V'shemesh v'rech nishcharu, are going to become dark. V'akachavim nechnisu zoharam, their shine will be taken away. Below yi'ir alpnei table, will not give any light over the face of the earth. Rashi, Pasig test, bo'ir yoshoiku l'shoin hashmuas kol, it means to give forth sound. Kimoi ki mashak gave in, like the pasuk said before, the cisterns, they make noise as the water rushes in the cistern when water is flowing. Doiv shoikek, a lion makes sounds. A lion roars. A bear. Doiv shoikek, we had 5 creatures, and each creature has a unique expression. So this is the expression, the sound, the description of the sound of a bear. It's shakek. Mimshak chorul. I don't know what that word means. Chorul, some creature. It's a creature which makes loud noise.
Thorns?
The thorns make noise? Okay, when they're being burnt? Okay, we'll have to see. When they're being burnt? Maybe we'll have to see. The yoina sam tear game to rustle in the wind. To rustle in the wind, the thorns make noise when they rustle in the wind, or we'll have to see in Safani. We didn't get there yet. The Yoina Santir Gem Lashay Neshek, a new interpretation. The word Yoshoiku means there are weapons. The weapons are drawn in this city. The people are terrorized when the enemy enters, and they draw their weapons and they push them around. And if you don't listen to their orders, they'll kill you. They'll just stab and kill their victims. So the word here in me is a reference to the word neshek mizdainin. So we have two translations for this word yoshaygu. Next pasuk yod rasha shemayim b'shvil puronasam halbo al yisrael, due to the puronas, the punishment that's going upon the Jewish people. Regzim rashim, the heavens and the earth and the stars, they are making loud sounds. Asfu nakam, the stars withdraw their shine. Ichnisu oiram radak pasik tes bo'ir yashayku inyan shayk v'zochar ze halashon bo'arbeh lefi sheshokom aruchos. Third interpretation does not mean to make noise. Does not mean to the weapons are drawn. It means the thigh, the legs, and being that we are dealing with locust, locusts have long legs. So what do people see? They see these long, extended legs wherever they turn. And that's a frightening thing. Inyan shoik, the thigh, the leg. They're very long. It's always on the move. Legs are used to move. So since the locusts are always moving from location to location, we describe it by the part of the body which brings about their movement. So he learns, gevim means grasshoppers. You see, he takes the same exact pasuk as Rashi, and the Mitzvos, but instead of telling us what gevim means, a cistern, which is a well, and water, sound of water, he learns it means, the gevim means grasshoppers. And here it means kimashak gave him shakek. And here the word means kimashak means like the legs of the locust of the grasshoppers are shakek bo. In that this context, what shakek means is jumping around. It's on the move. It's pounding away.
On the leg of the grasshopper, the locust, what's equivalent to our thigh, that's where they have the muscle that makes them jump.
So they're jumping, shaykeik bo, they're pounding away. The continuous movement. So this is referring to Eliezer. This is what Avraham Avinu said, that what do I have in this world? I have nothing in this world. All I have is Eliezer. And he is the Ben Mesek. So what does it mean, the Ben Mesek? It means, if you understand the game, Bekarto Mizdainin. It means in the city of my weapons. So basically, what? So it means that he was appointed to oversee the security. He was chief of security, Homeland Security, Secretary of Homeland Security. What?
Like his fortress.
His fortress. Eliezer, according to the Targum, Uven Meshek, he's going back to the first interpretation, that the word Yoshoiku means weapons. It means that in the city, the enemy has drawn its weapon and is threatening the citizens to follow orders. And where do we see a similar word where the word Yoshoiku means a weapon? So the key letters are the Shin and the Kuf. Those two words go together. Where do we find that? We find that by Eliezer, Uven Meshek Beisi, which in this context means the Secretary of Homeland Security is Eliezer. He is the person in charge of the security of my home. He's the butler. He checks who comes in, who comes out. That's how the Targum learns. Very good. He took Eliezer. Excellent. That's why he's fantastic. Now we have a real good appreciation. That was his specialty, war, security. Fighting, because that's when he heard that Lot was taken captive by the four kings. Who did he take with him? 318 men. And what does Rashi say? Is Bigamatria Eliezer. Why Eliezer? Eliezer is fit to fight. He's up to the task to go to war. Well, this pasuk says this. You need now. You know this radak. You know the secret. Because since Eliezer is called Uven Meshek Beisi, he is the person who was appointed over the weapons of my home. He's in charge of security. Security. That's right. He's been trained. He has been trained in the art of warfare. And therefore, what will the IDF people go into when they finish their duty to the country? They become security agents. Chief of security for this place and that place. You always say, what he used to be in the IDF. He won medals and he was the equivalent of a Purple Heart, whatever they give there to Israel. And now what is he doing? He's in charge of security. Security of in America, of this big corporation. The chief of security is this person who is used to be a big machar in the IDF. You always hear these stories. They make a lot of money. Some make a lot of money because they've been trained the best. In New York City, they go out of their mind because New York City, the police department, they receive the best training in the entire world to be a police officer. There's nowhere in the entire world where an average police officer. Some of the people in New York City, they're trained better than the Navy SEALs in some other countries. Okay, the Navy SEALs in third world countries don't even have even the marshal of the training that they give someone in the New York City Police Department. And it costs a lot of money to train these people. It costs a fortune to train these people. And what do? Many of them, they work for a year or two, and then they get a job in a private security firm. And New York City goes berserk. We spend so much money training you. So much money. And you take all the money that we invested in you and you just leave us to go serve as some shomer kishuim in the other part of the world. It's not right. It's unethical. Okay, there's a whole thing going on. It's unethical that New York City feels, the mayor feels, that it's not right. If you want to be part of the police department, we're going to invest in you. You have to commit yourself to serve the city for a certain period of time. That it should be worth it for us. So here, Eliezer was trained. He was the most well-trained person. And it really connects all the dots. Very, very fascinating, this Radak. Okay, let's just finish up this puzzle. Let's finish up a little more. Babotim Yalu, the enemy is going to enter into the homes. They can enter the homes. Ki mishoas oivim yisogeid ha'odam babotim ha'goivim. Okay, so the mishoor oivim, he's changing the gear. So ki mishoor oivim, from other enemies, people take, they took refuge, or they hid. They would hide in the fortresses, in the castles. In whatever they had in ancient times, when the enemy came into the city, there was a backup plan. You would hide in some type of fortress. So here it says it's not going to help you. If once the enemy penetrates the wall of the city, they come into the city, even though you think you're going to hide, you're going to be safe in a fortress, the enemy will come in through the windows. Svach is the lattice work. The ganef will get in no matter what. There's no such thing. They work. So no such thing as a ganef. You make it hard for the ganef. In security, the rule over is you make it hard for the ganef. Because so he'll pass over your property, he'll go to someone else's property. It's a very nasty attitude, right? It's a nasty attitude. But the rule is, if they want to get in, they're in. Nothing is holding them back. You cannot do anything in this world to prevent a ganef. A ganef who wants to get in will get in. The only thing you can do is you can discourage him. You'll discourage him, so he'll go on to an easier target. So here as well, that the ganef, he can't get into the door. No, there's always a way. There's always a way to get in. We'll get in through the window. Lefanav rugs aretz. From the earth will rugs below tirgas aretz. Lefanav zedech mashal v'chein rosh shemayim v'kadar v'yasu nagam. Ha'kol mashal l'revat zara k'chein derech ha'kasev k'mo chashach ha'shemesh b'tzeisa v'ha'daimim l'chem rabim v'inim asu nagam. Asu oiram l'soicham shonire v'chein oisev yadecha v'yosef raglov. To take in your feet, take in your hands. And it just means that the tsar is so enormous. It's so enormous. This is the way we are going to describe. Now we're not finished yet. We have to do the malam. We have a very nice mitzvah gedolah, and then we're going to come here to Shabbos Shuvah. Okay, this is the end of Shabbos Shuvah. On Shabbos we skip around. We learn from three haftorahs. It's the most complex haftorah. You learn from Micha, and you learn from Yoel, and the third one is from, what's the third one?
Hoshea.
First Hoshea. And then so you learn from three of the Trei Asar, and we already learned the part of Shuvah Yisrael is in Hoshea, that's the beginning, and then we go to Yoel, and then you go to Micha. And the big question is, what is the proper say there? Everyone gets mixed up about this. Everyone gets mixed up about the Seder. Maybe we should talk about that when we get them tomorrow. Talk about that, this whole, the whole tumult of, what?
So that's the question.
Do you do your, it's not so simple. There's a very big issue. There's a very big issue about this. And maybe the Meir Shem will talk about this. I know in Chaim Berlin, they used to learn from Klaf from time immemorial. Before everyone had Klaf, they had Klaf from time immemorial. And there, the Minig was, they went backwards. If I'm not mistaken, years ago, the Minig was, they always lay in from Hoshea. Then they went to Micha. And then they went back at the end, they went to Yoel. They went backwards from beginning to the end. And then the last couple of years, they changed. The last, someone convinced them they're doing it wrong.
And they changed to do it in the order, like it first Hoshea, Yoel, and then Micha. So it's not necessarily they're wrong. Okay, there are different issues, and maybe Mishnah will discuss it, but here we're coming out to the second part of the Haftarah. We'll stop here.